Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Each and every day here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, we do a little thing called The List. George, fired up. College football. All right, Cobb. So, all right, I'm having to do it from memory. I don't have my notes in front of me. So tonight, I believe we have dueling 6:30 ESPN, ESPN2 games. On ESPN, we got USF hosting UTSA. I believe on the Deuce, we've got App State hosting App State. Are they hosting
you got
Marshall?
Ooh, so close.
No, Marshall's Saturday. Hang on. App State is hosting Georgia Southern. It's what is it? Deeper Than Hate? What do they call it?
I feel like you looked at something. I feel like you cheated there.
I can neither confirm nor deny.
I could just see your head looking down.
No, my Coach Torrey handed me his pick sheet. So we've got that. Then I know everybody's fired up over on Prime Video to watch the Broncos hosting the Raiders. Do we have any decent college hoops tonight?
Oh, no, not at all. The absence of decent college hoops is sort of what we're looking at tonight. You know, unless you really want to watch the Citadel and Boston College, unless you're big into that, no, it's rough, man. This is a major bug of college basketball's opening week, is that the decent matchups are so few and far between, and tonight there is a total lack of them.
Also, I haven't gone through everyone's schedule. I think it's possible the Tigers might play their first game last.
Very close to it, yeah. There's not many teams left out there that have yet to play a game. And Memphis, by the time Saturday comes around, yeah, you might be right. Like, they might be the last one to play their first game.
Okay, so with Georgia Southern and App, okay, enjoy that. I think the thing that's interesting about USF is – I don't think UTSA is going to be able to unload the clip again, but I think it is pretty clean. If I'm a Memphis fan, man, I'd love for UTSA to win the game simply because even if I'm hosting it, I just don't want to see South Florida again because I think those are the two clear best teams in the league.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. Big time opportunity here for Memphis to just sort of clear South Florida away from the pack. Now, I will say, like, there is still a scenario. I know it seems far-fetched right now because you have 6 American teams with one loss in the league. It's still possible that you could end up with a 2-loss American team in the conference championship game because the weeks ahead are going to feature a lot of these 1-loss teams playing each other. In fact, I mean, Memphis's last 3 games are against teams that have 1 loss in the league standings right now. So, like, I think, obviously, South Florida losing would get them 1 step closer to just being – you know, done and out of the picture, but I wouldn't necessarily like guarantee it, I guess, if that makes sense. So it would be helpful, no doubt.
No, we looked at it too. I think the problem that you're going to run into is North Texas is going to have to work pretty hard to lose a second game. But to your point, could you have a 2-loss team elsewhere? Like, sure. What if, you know, what if South Florida loses tonight, Memphis beats Navy but loses to ECU? ECU's only got 1 loss right now,
exactly.
Right?
In
conference play.
It could get complicated.
Okay, so let's get to tomorrow night. So we have 8 o'clock. So the Tigers play after UNC, after UNC-KU, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, we also have Northwestern at USC, and I believe we have Houston at UCF.
Okay, yeah. So tomorrow night, yeah, Northwestern at USC, Houston at UCF, and yeah, I mean Tulane, Memphis, which you could argue is more interesting than either of those Power Four games.
I think that's definitely the case. I guess we are in another situation where the story is how much is Brennan Lewis, you know, how much of it is Ryan Silverfield playing mind games, whatnot. I think we're at the point now where I'm just expecting him to play. Although, what's the line at? I think I saw it down to 4.
It's down to 3.5. So Memphis has a 3.5-point home favorite over Tulane.
Okay. What am I missing? Because the thing that I think is actually the fatal flaw of Tulane is their run defense. And Memphis, if you go by EPA per designed run, I think they're the 4th best team in the country. They're top 5 in rushing success rate. Like, they are a legitimately good football team when it comes to running the football. What am I missing? Is this maybe the fact that they don't think Brennan's playing?
I mean, it could be that or just vulnerabilities in the Memphis defense, and they think Tulane's going to be able to keep up. Not necessarily because Jake Retzlaff's not some great passer of the football, but, I mean, you know, they could run it on Memphis a little bit. I mean, you could talk me into that.
I could eat these words. I'm still more scared of next week's game for the Tigers than I am tomorrow night.
You go to ECU, that's not going to be easy, but...
Well, and also here's why. It's matchup specific. ECU's going to be able to throw it. ECU's not even going to try to run it on them. And I still don't trust this Memphis secondary. I just don't think they played a lot of teams that can exploit it. And to your point, I'm not super concerned about Retzlaff exploiting it. The teams that bother me are those teams that I think will be able to pitch and catch it on it.
Yeah, I just think, like, tonight, situationally, like, if you look at it from a narrative-based perspective, right, like, you're going to get a best shot from Tulane or tomorrow night, right? Because they're coming off of a really embarrassing loss that kind of ejected them for the time being anyway from, like, the college football playoff conversation, although they could absolutely get right back into that with a win tomorrow. And then you've got, I don't know. I mean, this is a Tulane team that beat Duke earlier in the season, right? So, like, there is some juice in there somewhere. It was nowhere to be found against UTSA. So it's like, It's the bounce back spot. It's the gut check time. Like, that's what this is for Tulane. You're going on the road against the team that everybody has written into the college football playoff bracket. Like, if John Summerall, if you are the coach who we're all making you out to be, like, you're going to get your boys up for this one. So, like, you just kind of look at it from the standpoint of that narrative. And, like, I think there's a pretty good reason to be nervous as a Memphis fan that, like, Tulane's going to come in here with an edge and try to play their best game.
Well, and also, I mean, I don't think you can discount this psychological element. I mean, hey, yeah, you didn't see your name in the top 25, but you saw your name on the bracket. How do you handle that? And I actually, I don't know if it mattered, but I don't think it hurt the fact that Memphis played on Friday night last week and they watched UTSA do what they did to Tulane. The way that Memphis handled their business against Rice and disposed of them very quickly, you can't tell me that that didn't help or that didn't hurt. The fact that they watched what happened to Tulane the night before.
Well, sure. And I also think, like, Tulane's ugly loss was a one-off in a way. Like, UTSA finally played the type of game that we all thought they were capable of. At the same time, like, Tulane just got slaughtered in the turnover battle, right? So, like, the UTSA finally figures it out on a night when they're winning the turnover battle, and the result is they went out and pounded a pretty good team. Like there's a little bit of one-off flukishness.
Well, and don't forget the pumping into the crowd noise.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So, I don't know. It's going to be a battle. I think these last 3 games are going to be a battle. We've seen enough from the American this year to know that, like, there is not much separation really, if any, between any of these teams that are in the mix for the conference title. I mean, there was a time in September maybe when you thought South Florida is head and shoulders above the rest of the conference and they're going to be the best team in the G5. Well, Not exactly. I mean, you know, Memphis is able to beat them, but Memphis is not a perfect team by any stretch. And, you know, Tulane is I think they're right there in that mix. I don't think there's anything to me that smells really all that off about this line. Like, sure, like Tulane wasn't ready up front to hang with Ole Miss. And like, I know you've had a hard time getting that mental picture out of your mind. And like, I totally understand.
No, you know what game it is? It's the Army game. The Ole Miss one, I could at least rationalize. Ole Miss has better players, and they played a really good game that week. It's what Army did, because I've watched Army struggle to move the football on anyone that has a capable defense, like in the non-Air Force division. It was the fact that Army was just going up and down the field on them.
Yeah, I just think you hate Tulane. I want to know, like, what's up with that?
No,
like,
it's that I don't – this Tulane team – I've stumped for Tulane before. I don't think this Tulane team passes the eye test.
So you think John Summerall is just trying to hang on for dear life and hop up out of there? I mean, honestly, that's part of this, because he is.
Oh, buddy, don't think I haven't considered those factors on the gambling card.
Oh, I'm sure you have, and you should. Like, this guy's got one foot out the door. I mean, let's not sugarcoat it. John Summerall is doing his doggone best to get an SEC job right now, and he's probably going to get one. I mean, basically, it sounds like he's a ride-in for Auburn if they don't hit whatever home run they're going to try to hit. So I think that's got to be factored in here, because Auburn comes calling, man, or LSU comes calling. I don't care how dysfunctional those places are. Like, you can't say no when you're at Tulane if you get a call from an SEC job, especially one that's an upper half of the conference sort of gig like that. So, yeah, I mean, there's that's the only – honestly, I would look at that more than I would, like, trying to read into the way they played against UTSA, because I think that was more of a fluke.
Yeah, it's less how, like, it was exactly. They've not been good against the run this year, and it just was a continuation for me. I think that's where I struggle. Okay, anything else Friday night you want to discuss?
Nah, not really. I mean, I'll be locked into ESPN all night, because we go from Kansas UNC to Memphis Tulane. So that'll be a rare sort of one screen night for me for the most part.
And you got Fubo, right?
I do.
Okay, so you don't have ESPN issues.
No, in fact, I've got ESPN Unlimited, whatever that means.
There you go. All right, let's get to Saturday. I mean, we got it. I don't know if you want to call it a playoff eliminator. I think it's a playoff eliminator for Texas Tech. So SEC all day starts with Texas Tech hosting BYU. And I think the first question I have, Cobb, is this another – when you look at this line, you go, well, that seems like too many points. But I did the same thing with Cincinnati last week, and it took 90 seconds for me to realize – I can just go ahead and move that one into the L column, because Cincinnati will not be competing against Utah. Like, I do. Well, whenever I see these big double digit lines, I'm like, man, that doesn't seem right. But I also looked it up. Double digit favorites in Big 12 play are 11-6 against the number. Only one team has lost. That was Houston last week to West Virginia.
Wow, that's good stuff right there, man. I think the more you look at it, the more it makes sense. All right, this is a Texas Tech team with a nasty, fierce defensive front, and now they finally have their star quarterback healthy again at home against a BYU team that has been living on luck all season long, and honestly for 2 years in a row now. This team's just sort of had the magic, right? Like, being able to win close games and turnover luck and whatever the case may be, they're finding a way to win games, but it's not necessarily in some statistically dominant fashion. So, like, I respect the heck out of finding a way to get the W, because BYU has mastered that over the last 2 years. But you go on the road to Lubbock against a pretty healthy, pretty talented Texas Tech team. It now makes sense to me. Like, I had to marinate on it for a little bit, but, like, there's a pretty good chance that we look up and Texas Tech has 12 tackles for loss and four sacks, and they just sort of squeeze the life out of BYU. I could see that playing out.
I think the other question that I have with BYU is, how much of it is luck, and how much of it is, are they the opposite of metric manipulators? Like, remember some of those Penny Hardaway teams that we used to pull our hair out because it's like, if they were favored by 7 points or more, like, they were never going to blow anyone out. But then, like, when they'd go up against, you know, a top 10 team and they were 7-point dogs, they could win the game outright. I do wonder some of BYU, is it like, hey, they knew they had a freshman quarterback. They try to keep it somewhat risk-free. And because of that, they wind up, like, they wind up never looking that impressive, but then you get them into these spots. Like, I don't know. I feel like we're either going to get into this game tomorrow and it's going to be fourth quarter sweaty palms, or it's going to be like, oh yeah, Texas Tech, like one of the more weird results of the year is going to be like when they went to Tempe and lost. Like, I don't know. Like, that's kind of where I struggle with, like, because my gut says this is a Texas Tech flex spot, but I'm also smart enough to know that I'm dumb. So maybe I'm just wrong.
Oh, it's definitely a flex spot. Again, I don't think you can overstate the significance of getting Baron Morton back. Like, because their quarterback situation had devolved into a bleak deal pretty quickly, because Will Hammond was hurt, and then you're playing a Wake Forest transfer who was no good, and like it was getting dicey real fast. But now you got him back, you're at home, and your back's against the wall, the season's on the line. The trick is, I think if Texas Tech just doesn't beat itself, like if you keep your penalties to single digits, if you keep your turnovers to like one or fewer, don't give up a special teams touchdown. Like, those are the sort of things that like BYU will make you pay for. Like, that's what they survive on, is like you being the one to mess it up.
I guess the other concern I have for Tech, because I've weirdly watched a lot of Tech the last month, the one place that I think their defense is susceptible, because that front is so good, but that front plays really aggressively, they've gotten kind of burned on quarterback run a little bit this year.
Oh, Bear will run it. Bear Bachmeier, man, he's fun. He's a freshman. And, you know, it's cool. I love that we got these three-star freshman quarterbacks who nobody had heard of before the season just balling out. You got Bear Bachmeier at BYU. You got Mason Heinschel at Pitt. Still got people mad at me for ranking him number one in the quarterback power rankings last week. But, man, you're a three-star true freshman in college football playing at the Power Four level, and you go out and, I mean, Mason Heinschel's 5-0 as a starter. Bear Bachmeier's 8-0 as a starter at BYU. Like that deserves to be celebrated. And a lot of, like, to your point, like, a lot of what Bear Bachmeier does is off script. It's with the legs. And I don't think he's out here running a 4.440, but, like, he's elusive and he knows when to take off. So that's I mean, half the battle is understanding, like, when's the time. And for a kid who hadn't played a whole lot of college football, like, he seems to have that innate sense of when to go.
Okay, also in this window, we have the Battle of the Bulldogs. We've got Georgia going to Mississippi State. I believe in SEC play, Georgia has only beaten one team by more than 8 points, and that was Kentucky at home about a month ago. I don't know. I mean, I guess this is the question. Do you think we're going to see a spot in the next couple of weeks where Georgia is going to flex a little bit?
I don't know. I kind of have maybe started to believe that that's just not who they are.
Who they are, yeah.
Now, I will say, like, Mississippi State with their style of play is vulnerable to being the victim of that, because they're going to go fast, and if they go fast and go three and out, then all of a sudden a Georgia offense that's shown bits and pieces of explosiveness over the course of the season is getting a lot of possessions, probably some good field position. So there's a scenario where that happens. But I mean, if we're being honest about Mississippi State, they should probably be better than 5-4. They are better than that record, because in particular, the Florida loss, just that crippling interception late, when they were pretty much already in position to kick the game winning field goal. You've got that. You've got, I mean, a couple of other just brutal.
The blown 17-point lead. Yeah. Texas.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you go, I mean, if this game were in Athens, I would like, I mean, the line's up to 9.5. If it were in Athens, I would like Georgia at that number a lot better. But in Starkville, man, I don't know. Like, that seems a little too high for me.
No, I mean, I they're also phenomenal kids against the spread. I mean, those are some of the finest young men that I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, those kids understand good teams win, but great teams cover. All right, also in this window, we have Indiana, Penn State. I don't know. I'm just kind of like, The fact that it's only 15 makes me sit there and go, okay, maybe this ends up being a sneaky game. But there's also the reality of, like, maybe you should just, because they just won't figure out a way to buy a lot.
Yeah, so with Penn State, they probably gave everything they had at Ohio State last week. That, like, that first half was like their last hoorah. I would venture to guess. I actually got this one at -13.5. So yeah, pretty stoked about that because Indiana's a wagon. Like you probably have it. Yeah, you probably have their like against the spread like memorized, but I can't imagine they've failed to cover too often this year.
My boy Jonathan Smith and the great cover off Michigan State when they were like, it was two coaches doing whatever they could to cover the spread, kicking no apparent reason field goals. Like it was a thing of beauty to watch. I don't know. Is there anything else in the early window?
Not particularly. It's pretty light after that.
All right, let's get to the afternoon. Is quietly Iowa a good football team?
I'm picking them straight up to beat Oregon, which I've had some pretty good luck on Iowa straight up in the past.
Iowa has given Indiana its best game of the year.
Yeah, and it's so going to Kinnick Stadium in November just feels like an absolute death trap for an Oregon team that has shown us absolutely nothing.
Do you have a weather report?
Oh, let me pull it up. Let's see. Because you put Oregon in a freezing cold Kinnick Stadium. Like, I just think that could be a disaster for Oregon. So it's going to be high of 45 with a pretty good chance of rain.
Oh, that does not feel like duck weather.
But boy, they are lucky that it's not last Sunday because it's going to be 34 and there might be some snow in the air. But I mean, still 45 with a chance of precipitation. You want me to believe Oregon's going to go in there and put up 40 points with the style of offense they've been playing recently? I don't see it, man. And this line's now up to 6.5. Like, I mean, I think Iowa's going to cover and I think they got a chance to win. I mean, they still can't throw the football, but Mark Gronowski, I mean, he can at least run it. I mean, give him credit for that. He's makes him the best quarterback Iowa's had in the last 5 or 6 years. So, I think this is like a legitimate trap spot for Oregon. And I'm just so glad that the College Football Playoff Rankings Committee saw through the absurdity of their nothing resume. And, I mean, I think you could even make a case they should have been lower than 9. But, I mean, you know, based on where they come up in the AP poll every week, it's like, geez, you would have thought this team was actually like had proven something and they haven't. So, I am very, very dubious of Oregon.
Is the only hesitation I have, what's their DC's name? Is it Phil Parker?
Yeah, he's been there for forever. Yeah.
Did you see he called out Oregon for their well-funded roster?
Oh, gosh. That usually doesn't end well.
Ask Mike Gundy
about that.
Dan is very sensitive. Lanning is very sensitive to that. Okay, also in this window, we have A&M going on the road. A&M hasn't quite been the same team on the road unless they're in Baton Rouge and trying to lay it on and make a statement against the Tigers. But I think the real question is how much magic can Drinkwitz find with a third-team quarterback?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a true freshman at that. And
he did not play that well. I'm sorry. He did not play that badly when he came in spot duty against Vandy.
No, but I kind of have this theory that these quarterbacks who are just thrust in there.
I agree. When they don't have time to think about it.
Absolutely. And now he's had not only a week, but a bye week as well. And it's going to be just an over, you just over-mentalize. That's not a word, but you get what I'm saying. Like, you just overthink this game plan that you've spent 12 days working on. And, that Texas A&M defense, like, they have their vulnerable moments, but their good moments are good. And they're going to be teeing off. Mike Elko is licking his chops. This is probably one of my easiest plays of the week. I mean, I got Texas A&M winning and covering. I think Missouri is a bit fraudulent anyway. Like, for example, their running back, Ahmad Hardy, who's been really good. Like, you look at the stats, and you're like, wow, this kid's a stud. And like, okay, yeah, he was awesome against their non-conference competition, but he's not been nearly as good in the SEC because it's, surprise, you're playing against better defenses. So, like, I don't know how Missouri's going to score points in this game. Like, that's a pretty serious hurdle that we got to overcome before we can talk about them you know, covering a 7-point spread.
Yeah, I mean, I think the one question will be if Marcel Reed can get a little loose with the football, but I tend to agree with you. This is one of those ones where I'm like, yeah, this kind of feels easy. This feels like lay the number with a trustworthy team. All right, let's get to the night slate quickly. We've got three games that I think are interesting because, number one, is there any possibility of an interim coach bump for LSU?
I kind of thought at first, okay, yeah, maybe LSU can find something here. Maybe they can channel a little bit of like a dead cat bounce and go into Bryant Denny and make it interesting. But then you realize Alabama's won 84 straight at home against unranked opponents. I think since that infamous Louisiana Monroe loss in Saban's first year. And then the last three interim head coaches that played on the road against a top five opponent in their first game, they were all outscored by 30 or more points. I don't think
also DeBoer undefeated at home, and he's 5-1 in conference play ATS.
And I'm assuming he's wearing the black hoodie. So Alabama, man. Like I hate to pick two SEC favorites in a row because the league's been so good this year and there's been a lot of close games. But I definitely think Alabama's going to win this one walking away.
All right, Auburn goes to Nashville. I do think there's a chance for an interim coach bump. While I'm not sure I would ever handpick Derek Nix to be my play caller, I do think Derek Nix will not try to call plays that they haven't run for a month. So there could be a little bit of a bump there. But also, like, I don't know. I think Auburn's defense is still really good. I can just see this thing being a war. And, you know, Vandy played great in that fourth quarter, but, man, they were really struggling to move the football in the previous three.
Yeah, this to me feels like the SEC game that'll come down to the wire. I mean, I could – Florida, Kentucky could as well. But I tend to agree with your analysis of Auburn Vandy. Like DJ Durkin at this stage is probably a better coach than Hugh Freeze. And did you see where, I mean, basically Durkin was like, no, we're not going to do this nonsense where one person calls the plays on one down. And
yeah,
you know, he's basically saying Derek Nix is our OC, like just sort of streamlining the offensive operation is only going to help Auburn. And then Vanderbilt's a little bit of a wounded animal, you know, coming in here. They've played a lot of, like, rugged, difficult games in consecutive weeks and coming off of an emotional, like, down-to-the-wire loss where they fought back on the road at Texas. Game day's not here anymore. You're not in the national spotlight anymore. You're just trying to hang on for dear life. So it does feel like a bit of a dangerous situation for Vandy.
I kind of thought on Tuesday night they were one of the big losers. Like, I think we kind of thought if they get to 10-2, they're in. The problem that George and I talked about is when you start going through it, even if they are to win out, okay, so they're going to beat Auburn, Kentucky, then they have a good road win in Knoxville, but they're going to really struggle to pass people. I actually thought of all the SEC teams, they wound up as the biggest loser.
Yeah, a bit of an insult, I thought, for Vanderbilt to be down at 16. What was your take on Ole Miss? Because I know you've been worried like all along about like a potential two-loss Ole Miss team missing out. But, I mean, they're in here at 6 with one loss. If they take a second loss, it'll be probably – I mean, who would that second loss be? Mississippi State?
It'd either be Florida next week in a weird game where all the Florida media is going to be doing Kiffin talk or State. That's the problem. If they get to 10-2, it's a bad loss. So yeah. I guess you're right that that's still in play, but like, yeah, I don't know. All right. Then lastly, before we take a break and talk to Jason, is our Cal under 5.5 wins quietly back alive?
I think so, which brings me back to potentially a 5-0 slate on my preseason win totals. Yeah, they have disintegrated, I think would be the right term. They really lost that early season juice there. Yeah, they're at Louisville. The thing is, I just have a hard time seeing Louisville cover 18.5. Like, they just don't have – like, Miller Moss is not the electric, highly productive quarterback that you're used to seeing from Jeff Brohm.
And then also we have Florida and Kentucky. I guess put Florida on Quit Watch. Did you see the availability report?
No, is it fairly lengthy?
It's like a Faulkner novel.
Yeah, I can't get through Faulkner. Like, I've tried. I've really tried.
You and me both, buddy. Like, hey, try a period just one time for me. Just one freaking time. Try a period. All right, let's take a quick break. Let's talk with Jason Smith, big Tiger football game, and we'll also get a look at Tiger basketball for real on Saturday. We'll do all that next right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Jason Smith is the co-host of the Jason and John Show, weekdays right here on 92.9 FM ESPN from 11 until 2. Follow him on the Everything app, 8 at Jason Smith, 929. Jason, what is the biggest Tiger football game since?
Since South Florida. No, I mean, that's, you know, if you want to go back years, I don't know, conference championship game in 2019. I mean, there's.
I think you're spot on, because I was thinking about this week. This week will be the biggest game since South Florida, but the only reason why it's the biggest game since South Florida is because you beat South Florida, because that makes this a big, and then next week would become a massive game, and then the following one comes. Like, that's just kind of the reality of where they are. Like, each week presents a new big time, you know, opportunity.
100%, because you become, you know, you're getting a step closer to the ultimate goal, which is, yes, winning the American championship. But we understand that with that this year comes, yes, what looks to be the representative of the you know, the group of five spot in the college football playoff. And so, yeah, each one that you get, and South Florida started, you know, at a time where we thought, okay, this might be it, coming off that UAB loss. You know, you take the second loss to, at the time, I would have told you, I think, Jeffrey, you and I were on the same page, that South Florida was the best team in the league. You take this loss, you're out of it. And you didn't. You had a hell of a fourth quarter, come back from 14 down, and it's set up for you what is clearly a path of ordered steps. You can see them just went out, and they all get bigger as you go. You've continued to state it. I heard you earlier. I said it before the season. That ECU game, and maybe wrong, maybe I've gone too far at this point, on this point, but that ECU game scares me more than this game does. This game against Tulane. Now, that's not to take anything away from the coach that I think John Summerall has shown he is. This is not a dominant Tulane team this year. Jeffrey, you've continued to point to that rush defense. Their defense is 10th overall in the American. I went and looked at it because I've been believing you all year long, and you're dead right. They're 8th in the league against the run. That's 8th in the American. About 158 yards per game is what they give up. That's what Memphis does. One of the best rushing attacks in the country, as you've said. And in the American, they're over 200 yards per game. And so hopefully, you know, script-wise, it's going to, you know, there is sort of a weakness that you can exploit considering how good a running team that you've been. All that said, you know, ECU, best defense in the conference. That game still with Navy ahead of it and everything stacking up, if you win this one, it still scares me to death. And I think more so than the one tomorrow night. Listen, they've got a linebacker back. I've been wondering, Jeffrey, you were talking about the line movement, what's happening. I don't think it can be that they think Brendan Lewis isn't playing, because Cramsey and Silverfield have kind of while they've been a little coy, hey, lower body injury, I said he's looked great in practice this week. So you got to imagine that Summerall is planning on Brendan Lewis. I certainly am planning on, as tough as he's been all season, on Brendan Lewis to be there. I wonder, you know, some of it, hey, man, maybe they just thought the line was too big, whatever else, but Tulane does, to get to my point here, have a guy that they feel like and they've called and sort of identified as the heart and soul of their defense, and maybe heart and soul of the entire team, in Sam Howard. He's a senior linebacker that's coming back. And if they're better against the run than they have been, certainly the last couple of weeks, it's going to be because he's in there. They've got one of their leaders back. And he seems like the kind of player that raises the level of those around him. And so from that standpoint, you know, maybe they're not as exploitable against the run, but I'm confident so long as Brendan Lewis is healthy enough. And he showed it in that fourth quarter in that South Florida game when he needed it most. He can make the throws that you'll at some point probably have to make, whether it's converting a late third down or getting into the end zone. Brendan Lewis with Cortez Bram, I believe in getting it done. And so I just think there's a lot of reasons, the way you just professionally handled Rice, that defensive effort last week, there's a lot of reason to believe that Memphis is going to take care of business tomorrow night. Sure, maybe it's not easy, but I think Memphis handles business against this Tulane team, and I'm concerned about next week in Greenville.
Jason, shifting sports now, still haven't gotten the first real official look at Memphis Tigers men's basketball, but we got a couple of not-so-encouraging exhibition looks, followed by some somewhat concerning remarks this week from Penny and the players. Yep. Where are we at on this team going into the season? I can't remember in his 8 years now a feeling of greater apprehension and just sort of bracing for impact. That's what it feels like we're doing right now with Memphis men's basketball, but I'm curious to get your take on where things are.
I don't know. Last year was big in that sense, Cobb, I would say, because last year going into it with essentially a whole new team, it's not as new as this one. This is 15 new guys. But there was, Penny better get this done. Remember the way the season had ended before against Javon Quinley. And it was sort of, you better, you know, do your thing or move on. I mean, I remember Jeff Calkins writing that or else type headline over at the Daily Memphian. So there was a bit of apprehension, especially after last year wasn't so great in the exhibitions as well. What was it, North Carolina and Alabama? And you particularly shot the ball really poorly from the outside. Now we know they went on to be one of the best shooting teams in the country. I'm not suggesting that's what this is going to be. Back to your point, though, Cobb. Yeah, man, concerning to hear Penny Hardaway. So my point is, I don't know if I'm going into this one with as much tension or I don't know, as because I think Penny has earned to some degree. We talked about it on our show today, the benefit of the doubt. If, whether you're talking about his regular season, with 10-3 in the non-conference to get the fourth toughest schedule in the country last year, right? Or taking care of business in conference like he needed to do, won the regular season title, won the conference tournament title. He ended up with his best season to that point, getting the 5 seed. You know, you go to the Maui final, something that Cal had never done. Larry Finch didn't do that when Penny was playing for him. They couldn't get to the finals. So I do think he built up some equity that, Cobb, I think, gets us into this season, that while he's saying some concerning things, and yes, you know, other than, as he's put it, the first 10 minutes of that Arkansas game, you said, man, I don't know. I still think this team that has been picked, I think, to win the conference, you've given the Penny Hardaway the benefit of the doubt that he'll get it figured out, at least as it relates to winning this conference. And so, yeah, man, I don't know what to expect on Saturday against San Francisco, but my expectations are that Penny Hardaway will get it figured out to enough to a point he'll win the American. Likely not looking at a 5 seed again, because I don't think you're going 10-3 in this non-conference. But, hey, get the 8-9 seed that will likely go to the winner of the American, or could likely go to the winner of the American, and you're back in. We'll go from there. I believe that Penny will get it figured out. At least that's what he's led me to believe now going into year 8.
Jason, who do you think would be the culprits of – Penny mentioned yesterday – the guys that have the most talent are not the guys that are exerting the most effort. I personally didn't see anything from Doug that would lead me to believe that it's that. I mean, do you think it's likely it's Bradshaw? Is it the bigs? Who do you think he's actually referencing?
Hey, you know, I thought about that too, Jeffrey, but I couldn't make enough of a case for a guy like Doug. Doug was a little bit different in that Auburn game that he had been against Arkansas, when he was so engaged and everything else, whether it was the shot, you know, the shots he took or didn't take in that game. It was a little bit different. You know, Doug's going to be a guy, though, that whether he's giving Penny what he wants right now or, you know, it's kicking in later, he has to have him. Like, you are too invested in Doug McDaniel to not get have that guy out there as a starter and hopefully they have it. Maybe it's, again, his way of sending a message to, whether it's Doug, whether it's Sincere, whether it's Bradshaw, to those guys, that, look, this is not good enough. You're like, these role players are beating you guys in effort right there, and it's a way for him to get it out there. You'd hope that message, you know, if it's not resonating in-house, I don't know that taking it publicly is necessarily going to resonate now in a way that it wouldn't have just telling them that there. Cobb said something that's true. Like, as much as I still believe, and we'll give Penny the benefit of the doubt, the fact that you're having players-only meetings, you know, or player meetings before the season has even started, is not a great sign as it relates to chemistry and things like that. And we already knew, like, the more times that you take this chance and have to replace an entire roster, essentially, then your chances of having bad chemistry at some point are, and maybe fall out like you had 2 years ago with that Javon Quinley team, those chances rise. And so, just because he got it figured out and the chemistry, my gosh, Tyrese Hunter was a big part of that last year, recognizing P.J. Haggerty's the best thing for our team. Yeah, I'm a leader, but let me take a step back. You know, it worked out last year. There's no promise that it will this year. And so these are concerning signs, but boom, here's the other part. You play your most important, 12 games to start the year. You know, you've got that one non-conference game against Utah State in the middle of your conference slate, but your most important time is right now. And so whether it's, tinkering, the fact that Penny City hadn't thrown any zone at them going into the exhibitions, well, you're going to be doing a lot on the fly then. So we'll see how it all gets done, but hopefully the cream will rise to the top, and if that's a shorter rotation, then I'm fine with that. I think Jeffrey, you and I probably both agree those have been the best Penny teams.
Do we lose Cobb?
No, you still got me. But if I were going to ask you one more thing, Jason, it would be, can you fix Ja Morant and the Memphis Grizzlies in 60 seconds? Can you do that? Can you do that in 60 seconds? Can you fix the Grizzlies?
I don't think so, man. Not right now. Not with the schedule they've got coming up, Cobb. I would tell you, if we're going to fix it, we better get this win against Dallas, because there's a good chance you don't get that one, that this losing streak with OKC coming up, this road trip you've got coming up, is going to extend. And and what it feels like right now is that the misery – will extend. And I'm not sure how much longer, you can be, this misery around this franchise right now, this vibe that has changed so much since Jeffrey pointed out halftime of the Lakers game. You're in control. You're up 3-2. You're up. You got 3-2 record. You're playing well, but it has been downhill since. They've got to get this stopped. Got to get Isolo, Ja, and Jaren on the same page. You talked about it, Cobb. You're dead right. Whatever it is, figure it out and get this to get a win on Friday against the Dallas team that's struggling out of the gate. Little bit of an opportunity here. So the best way to fix it is to win, but I'm not even sure right now that's going to get everybody on the same page again.
Jason, we appreciate it, my man.
Y'all take care. Be safe driving, Jeffrey.
All right, that is Jason Smith of the Jason and John Show. When we come back, we tell your story next right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 99 FM ESPN.
All right, boys, for today's Don't Tell These Story, tell your story. Did y'all see Britt Key's answer when he was asked about the job openings?
He said, cut me open and see what colors I bleed, right? Isn't that what he said?
So confirmed. I guess he's going to Arkansas? Bleeds red?
He's one of many who are at their alma mater, but it's going to make the one who does leave look really bad. Like if it's Jeff Brohm or if it's Brent Key or Clark Lee or whoever, the one guy who does leave their alma mater, man, that guy's going to look like a real Judas Iscariot.
It's like $12 million. Said 12 in a year, right? Yeah, you're gonna do that.
Well, that's a lot of money, yeah.
Yeah. All right, that is David Cobb, of course, of CBS Sports. Follow him on the Everything app at David W. Cobb. Back in studio, my thanks to Eric Hasselton and Jason Smith for joining us. However, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. The Gabe Kuhn Show is coming up next.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.